Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, the fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina.
Acknowledge me.
And as always, I'm joined by my buddy Scott Chu, who I got to see live and in person last week. Scott, how are you doing this week?
Doing great. Took a few days to recover from all that driving out to New York City, but doing great now. Just ready for real baseball. Not that 6 a.m. baseball isn't real baseball, but yeah. Like, I want all the other teams to be playing games that matter. So right. We're inching closer.
Just a few more days. This podcast debuts on Mondays. So just have a few more days, right? Thursday is opening day for the rest of the league. And we are recording this on Sunday, 12:10 p.m. Eastern time. And we'll talk about our tout drafts a little later, but I was taking a look at the chat and the Discord for Pitcher List, and all everybody can talk about is Shohei Ohtani and this situation with his interpreter. And I mean, obviously, by the time we record this, there's probably going to be new information coming out. But and check me if I get this wrong. Originally, it appeared that Shohei Ohtani's interpreter stole money from Shohei, and then there were other stories that no, Shohei was just paying off his interpreter's gambling debts. And then this morning I was reading about the background of his interpreter. I don't want to mispronounce his name, but I believe it's Ipe Mizuhura, and I guess former interpreter, former best friend who was fired by the Dodgers as Ohtani's interpreter. But some questions regarding his background now. Supposedly he had said that he graduated from the University of California. They said, no, he never went there. He said that he worked for the Red Sox as an interpreter. They said, no, he never worked here. And now the Associated Press reported that the IRS has opened a criminal investigation into Mizuhura. Now, I got to tell you, when I first started hearing this, I was like, well, what if Mizuhura was just placing bets for Ohtani, and that's why. Because how do you miss? Are you that rich that you miss $4 or $5 million out of your account? Or is he that great of a friend that you're going to say, okay, don't worry about the $5 million, I got you covered? I don't know. What are you thinking?
I think the biggest thing is just like me and you, Joe. We check our bank accounts personally.
Oh yeah, right?
We pay attention, mm-hmm. Right? Like we balance a checkbook. We do what we got to do. At that level of income, with that many revenue streams, with that many things he pays for, that he gets paid from, he doesn't get on to, plug my work. He doesn't get into PNC.com and log in. That's not how it works for Shohei Ohtani.
Right.
He pays people to handle all of those things. Mm-hmm. And that to me is where this starts is like, oh, how would you not notice you're missing this money? Well, it's not about Ohtani noticing. It's about the people he trusts telling him mm-hmm. that it's gone.
Right.
And I think trust is at the heart of this, where what is the relationship between Ohtani and Mizuhara? And just a couple interpreters have been on TV talking about like, they are sort of these like liaisons for the player, right? They're helping make hotel accommodations. They're helping them order, they're helping them order pizza. They're helping them do everything on a day-to-day basis. So it wouldn't be that surprising, for this guy who's been his interpreter for years now, for Ohtani to kind of trust him and just not ask about that stuff.
Right.
Right.
And when you say trust,
when
you say trust, you're trusting your interpreter to interpret what you're saying accurately too. It dawned on me, obviously, and it's obvious, but you're trusting this guy with almost everything, you're trusting this guy to express your opinions, express, you know, like you said, order the toppings on your pizza.
Yeah, we're talking about, I mean, Ohtani has known this guy, and, you know, it's been reported that he was not only his interpreter, he was his personal assistant and his, like, very close friend that he's known since he was 19 years old, right? So, you know, like, I'll just say from a fantasy angle, I am not trading away Shohei Ohtani. I am not discounting Shohei Ohtani in any way. I don't, granted, I'm not a fortune teller. I'm not, you know, I'm an attorney, but not this kind of attorney. I don't think that we're going to see the, you know, like when we see players who are in real trouble, teams will very quickly pull them out of the lineup and just hide them away. Right. We saw this with Franco. We saw this with the Dodgers' own Julio Urias.
Yes. Right? Yes.
These are different issues, but these teams, they pulled Trevor Bauer was on the Dodgers at this time. The Dodgers have had players run into controversy. It is interesting that they are taking this tack with Ohtani and not, you know, whereas the other two guys, they were like, oh, whoa, well, we're not, you know, we're going to let this investigation play out. We'll put this guy on the restricted list. We'll see what happens. I think so far, the only, like, I haven't seen a lot of evidence against Ohtani apart from, well, it must be, right? Like, a lot of, I mean, circumstantial evidence is evidence, but it's not the same as direct evidence, right? So,
and baseball has started their own investigation, so they're gonna get to the bottom of this. Would it put it past Major League Baseball to kind of try to sweep as much of this under the rug as possible? I mean, let's face it, Ohtani is a cash cow for MLB.
Well, not only that, gambling's different now.
Yes.
Right? Right. Like, number one, like, was he betting? You know, there's been some really crappy tweets out there about, oh, he was throwing his own games, this kind of thing. Like, it's all BS.
Yeah, throwing his own games by hitting 50 home runs. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, sure, whatever. Like, unless he was also communicating with the other pitchers, like, I don't know what, baseball's hard enough that, you know, to all of a sudden say, like, well, I guess I'm just not going to try today. Like, no one would notice.
Yeah. Mike Trout was in on it too, right? You know, sarcastic.
Yeah. Yeah. but that's, and so that's the thing to me is that, it, you know, that's the other big thing is, like, it's not the same as Pete Rose. Gambling, not only was, you know, I haven't really seen anything about Ohtani betting on baseball. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Gambling's just different now. Like, it is everywhere. The person who pays the piper calls the tune. Gambling pays the piper in professional sports right now. And if you didn't know that, watch a professional sport and count the gambling commercials, right? Like, PitcherList doesn't take any money from the gambling sites anymore because it was all, like, they brought in big money and we had to talk about it all the time, right? Like, ESPN didn't start talking about spreads until gambling was available in more states and it became insanely profitable to do so. So just, it's a different world. And I'm currently not worried about Ohtani missing any time, about being suspended, anything like that. I think this is an interesting story. I think this is, you know, and I think if you're going to be worried about Ohtani, it's that he's lost his interpreter, personal assistant, close friend, right? That's what he's lost at this time. He has not lost any playing time. He has lost someone very close to him personally. So who may have betrayed him horribly. So that's, if you're going to think about the fantasy angle, to me right now, that's the angle that that's maybe the most concerning, and I'm not doing anything about it.
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. His interpreter had such a cushy job too, right? Making millions just by being Ohtani's best friend.
Yeah.
I mean, but I guess all in all, we'll end this here. Like you said, I mean, it's, you know, we're recording this on Sunday and this podcast comes out on Monday and there's a few more days of drafting left. You know, you're not recommending anyone change their draft strategy. You know, if
he
believe,
did not, my rankings came out on March 22nd. That is after the news broke and I did not move him one bit. He stayed right there. He is in my top 10 hitters.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. You know, as we get closer and closer to opening day, where, you know, teams are solidifying their opening day rosters and whatnot. But there's some news. There's a couple of things that I'll just mention. And Matt McClain, Reds infielder, has this what The Athletic is kind of calling a mystery injury in his non-throwing shoulder, because they're not really specifically saying what it is, but they're saying that he might need surgery and he's getting a second opinion. And unfortunately for McClain, it's been a tough spring. He's already had dealt with an oblique injury, which was an issue at the end of last season as well. But actions speak louder than words, and the Reds think it's serious enough where they had to trade for another infielder. They acquired Santiago Espinal from the Blue Jays. And then, since our last podcast, Noelvi Marte, 80-game suspension for PEDU. So remember when we used to talk about how crowded that infield was in Cincinnati? And now, so McClain has this mystery injury. Noelvi Marte is suspended for 80 games. And, hey, if you didn't think that Jamer Candelaria was going to be playing every day, his playing time is cemented now.
I did not think we'd be in a position to be talking about the Reds trading for an infielder. That just a month ago, that would have blown my mind. Mm-hmm. Like, for God's sakes, why? But here we are, right? They did have to trade for Santiago Espinal, who's a scrappy little player. He can kind of slap the ball around. He plays decent defense. Former Toronto Blue Jay. He's not fantasy relevant in any sense, but I do think, all of a sudden there's DH at bats for people to steal. There's likely going to be several platoons. Jake Fraley is a little more interesting because he can also bounce between the DH spot was jammed up. Now it's open. Mm-hmm. I think the guy who gets the biggest opportunity out of all of this is Jonathan India, for two reasons. Not only does Jonathan India now have a job as starting second baseman for the Cincinnati Reds, he also took McClain's spot at the top of the lineup. So India is now going to bat first for the Reds, and that is massive for his fantasy value. I think he is now very, very relevant in all formats. I think he may have been undrafted in some of those leagues that drafted earlier. And you should absolutely be grabbing him right now because he's going to play every day. He's going to bat leadoff, and he's shown that he can be productive when healthy. And somehow he's one of the healthier players on this team right now. Right. So yeah, Jonathan India, that's the guy I'm really after. Most everyone else is kind of the same. Obviously Christian Encarnacion Strand is a guy who I've liked all off season. He moved up, around to the top 75 ish, for hitters, which is exciting too, but he was already kind of exciting. Like once Noelvi Marte was gone, it was, Christian Encarnacion Strand, he's going to get an opportunity. Now it's Jonathan India. He gets a huge step up because Encarnacion Strand is still hitting towards the bottom of this lineup. I think he can fight his way up and eventually start batting fifth for this team. Yeah. But right out of the gate, we're going to see India in that leadoff spot, probably against lefties and righties. And that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like you, I like Christian Encarnacion Strand. I think he's got 30 home run power, and the fact that he's going to be playing every day, being the Reds opening day first baseman, just adds to his fantasy value. I think another guy whose fantasy value went up a little bit was Will Benson, who's probably going to get some more playing time with the injury to TJ Friedl. And Benson, he's got some power, some speed abilities, and somebody like in a deeper league, you might want to, think about rostering, even if you're not going to start him every day.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets put in a platoon. There's only so many. The Reds do play a lot of platoon stuff, and part of that is just because the players they have, like Jake Fraley and Will Benson, are both guys who really ought to be in platoons. I think, with Benson, what really stood out last year is, there was a ton of batted ball luck there. 108 games, 329 plate appearances. Benson had 11 home runs, 19 stolen bases, and he hit 275 with a 365 OBP. Now, the OBP might still remain pretty good. He's walked a lot throughout his career, but this dude struck out 31% of the time, and that's about right. Like, and I'm surprised it actually wasn't a little worse than that. Benson is really going to struggle to come anywhere close to that 275 batting average he had last year. So even if he does play his 110, 120 games, this guy has the profile more of like a like, again, we're talking about a guy with like a sub 40 grade hit tool kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. he has a good eye, but he doesn't make contact well at all. So this is the kind of guy who is going to hit somewhere between 200 and 220. Mm-hmm. So I think he is a power speed play, but you have to be ready to take a big hit in batting average, although it's a much safer floor in OBP leagues thanks to that walk rate, which should stay around 12%. He's walked about 20% of the time here in spring training, and he walked 15%+ of the time in most of his stops in the minor leagues. So that'll stick around.
Mm-hmm. One other injury I'll just quickly mention, and you could make comment on, Josh Lowe, outfielder for the Rays. He already had been dealing with some left hip inflammation. Now he's going to open up the season on the IL due to a right oblique issue. And, you know, he was a guy that really came on. We've spoken about Josh Lowe, came on really strong at the end of last season. Good power, good speed. Does it open up any playing time for anybody that you're interested in at this time for the Rays?
The thing is, it doesn't open up playing time enough for any one player, right?
I mean, this is famous for that, yes.
these are the Rays we're talking about. So, yeah. You know, in a very deep league, I wouldn't hate throwing a little bit of fab out at like Harold Ramirez. He seems like he's going to be batting in the middle of this lineup a lot. And he's someone that has been good when healthy. He just is rarely healthy and rarely has like full-time work. So he's someone kind of interesting to keep your eye on. I'd really like to see Curtis Meade take advantage of his opportunity. Yes. With Junior Caminero not making the opening day roster, we've got Curtis Meade could play somewhere in the infield. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll take over for Isak Paredes over at third, but he could play some second base. At the very least, could platoon there with Brandon Lau. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brandon Lau. And, you know, there's some opportunity there as well, I think. And of course, the guy that the Rays signed in the offseason, Amed Rosario. I think Amed Rosario at a minimum is going to play every time they face a lefty. And there's only so long that a team is going to platoon. Like, if Amed Rosario is hitting at all, right? Like, how much run is Richie Palacios going to get? Right? Like, he's projected to be in the outfield. Jose Siri is a guy who's like a really good defender, and he's really fast, and he's hurt all the time. So if Siri goes down, I think that's another opportunity for Amed Rosario. So Amed Rosario is someone I have on the watch list in a lot of leagues, because if he gets opportunity, I think he can be, you know, a nice source of moderate power and decent speed on this race team that just loves to run. These guys, I mean, they will run on anyone at any time. So that's why if Amed Rosario finds regular playing time, you should move him in, because he'll start stealing bases.
Yeah. And MLB Playing Time, the site that's put together by Mike Kirkland, that do a really good job in terms of projected lineups. And they have Amed Rosario playing just about every day as the second baseman against right-handed pitching. And they actually have him in right field. left-handed pitching, so he's got that.
Yeah, that's kind of the other guy that could kind of steal time there is Richie Palacios, who's not someone who you really project as a large side of platoon kind of player. He's like this hit tool guy with no real power, no real speed. And he did get 100 at bats last year. 102 plate appearances, I should say. Puts a ton of balls in play, but is like a very poor man's version of like a Luis Arias type, who, again, it's all slaps. It's all how many line drives can I hit over the second baseman kind of player. So I don't think Palacios is a long-term threat to playing time, but I do see how the Rays being the Rays could put him in more.
Right. Okay. This might be a good spot for us to take our first break. We're going to talk about some younger players that made the opening day roster, guys like Wyatt Langford, Jackson Merrill, and what we could expect from them. We'll also talk about some guys that didn't make the opening day roster, but that we could expect to see play at some point this season. I also want to talk to Scott about his Tout Wars experience, and we'll talk about all of that right after this.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's disinfecting wipes conveniently tackle surfaces, including remotes, tablets, and smartphones, killing 99.9% of viruses and bacteria. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. You could follow me at Joe Galena, and you could follow Scott at If the True Fits. That's on X, formerly known as Twitter. So how did it go after you left New York last Sunday on St. Patrick's Day? Well, we had a chance to – I was happy that I got the chance to see you before my draft.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was just a long drive back home. You know, it's a long way. It's about 11 and a half hours with minimal stops. And I always give myself extra time, and I always burn all of that extra time in the first half of the trip. So lots of late night listening to podcasts, driving through central Pennsylvania in the middle of the night. Mm. So not exciting stuff, but it was fun. I love going to New York for that event just to chat with all the great people in the industry. I finally got to meet Ellen Adair for the first time. We only chatted for a couple seconds, but that was really cool because like she's like real person famous.
Yes.
Not just like in the industry. So that was cool. And of course, you know, seeing Justin and Nick and all the guys in, I got to meet, it was like my one little nerd moment was I got to meet Tristan Cockcroft. And like many people who got started in fantasy baseball, especially those, who are around my age, like in their mid-30s. When you got started with fantasy baseball, you probably played on like ESPN as a platform. Andy Barron's also in that league, so you might have played in Yahoo. And those were two guys that were just like the main content, providers that you listened to or read, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so way back, I got into fantasy baseball, and the first analyst I really got into was Tristan Cockcroft. So it was kind of cool, getting to chat with him and being in an auction draft with him. Let me tell you, man, a 15-team mixed auction, that takes a long time. that is a long day. So it was fun. I got to jump on Sirius XM for a little bit and talk about it. And also just being in that room and being the one that everyone kind of grilled for paying too much for a closer. But I've had trauma in recent years with closers. And I was like, now that there's one clear closer in Edwin Diaz, I was paying up for it. I was tired of the, in a 12 teamer, I'll do like the back end closer game all day. I'll play around because there's always guys, but man, in a 15 team weekly league, they're not there. Like the closers just aren't on the wire. You guys spend
15 team is tough. Yes. To get a closer.
So and that's what it is. It's 15 teams. So, I did get Tarek Skubal. So it was a very successful draft as far as
after I stole him from you in our pitcher list staff draft, you were very upset at me.
Cold blooded, just cold. Like you didn't know. Like you didn't know exactly what you were doing when you did. Like I haven't been talking I haven't been talking about Tarek Skubal in podcasts since like 2020, right? Like 2019. I think it was early 2020. I started talking about him in podcasts.
Respect your opinion. And look at the spring he's had.
No greater validation than Nick also liking Tarek Skubal now.
Yeah. I saw him tweet out or X out or whatever you call it, that he is a top 15 starter. So right there.
My binder.
Stamp of approval
of
right there.
Skubal, yes. My binder of Tarek Skubal autographs is now even that closer and nearer and dearer to my heart.
Yeah. So, Tristan Cockcroft actually was at my draft. He was punching in the picks as they were going, and then I got a chance to talk to him a little bit after we went out for the group went out for for wings in honor of the Zen master. And was talking to him. He's a big Yankee fan, so I was talking to him. So it was really good. And another thing that I liked was in the reserve draft, you know, you get once you're done with the auction part, my last pick was Garrett Crochet, a starting pitcher for the White Sox. And he looked at me and just nodded. So that's like a sign of approval. It's like, wow, that's pretty cool. And then I find out that he's actually going to be the opening day starting pitcher for the White Sox. He's probably not going to pitch a lot of innings because he's a very good prospect, but has had injuries. And I think the most innings he's ever pitched was something around the 60 innings pitch range. So we'll see. I mean, I'll take the few starts at the start of the season. But any other, observations about your team? So I see you spent a chunk of money on Spencer Strider, $37. This is a 260 total, right?
Yeah.
Out of $260 bucks.
So I sort of did like a, it's not quite Stars and Scrubs, but it's got that sort of feel to it. I was surprised that outfield has bargains in it. Right.
So especially late all in the of drafts.
You, yeah. Yeah. A lot of you will have done your drafts already by the time you're listening to this, but just know that outfield is quite deep these days. There's lots of guys that are just out there that are interesting, right? Especially in an OBP format like this one. I still think we're sleeping on JJ Bleday a little bit. Former top prospect for the Marlins is a guy who makes great decisions. You know, our PLV metrics love JJ Bleday's decision making. He was getting the walks in. I think that he can fix the strikeouts a little bit. He's going to get all the runway in the world out in Oakland, who are hoping that they can find anything that sticks at all. So that is a guy that I'd have my, 12 teamers, maybe not as much, but those 15 team leagues, I think at the very least you should be watching JJ Bleday to see if he can kind of take another step forward. Mm-hmm. Also, the market on Nicholas Castellanos is really, really cold.
Yes.
I got him for $6 in this auction. That's the same price I had to pay for Max Kepler. Mm. All right. These are not the same two guys, right? Like Nicholas Castellanos has immense upside. Yes, he's been an inconsistent guy, but like I left money on the table and part of it was because nobody wanted to pay for Nick Castellanos. So
how much did he go for you again?
$6.
He went for $4. My league was a 12 team head-to-head auction league, and he only went for $4. But yeah, as the auction drafts go on, you know, people don't have that much money to spend. So then that's when you're getting your bargains, right?
Yeah, but to see him just like across the board, see Nicholas Castellanos have this much lower value than even just like a year ago, for no reason, right? He's not hurt. Mm-hmm. He had a good season.
Yeah.
And no, it's almost like we like him less than last year. And I don't understand why. So if you're in a league and someone begrudgingly took Nicholas Castellanos, I wouldn't hate an early season trade. Just see like, hey, what do you think? Like in this league, I paid $9 for Jorge Soler and $6 for Nicholas Castellanos. And I almost certainly would take Castellanos over Soler. And I would trade for him straight up right now in pretty much any format, except for like home runs only. Like that's like, I would rather have Castellanos. So,
right.
He might be out there for a lot cheaper than he really should be.
Yeah. You talk about outfielders, that, you know, you kind of, people are ignoring. I kind of like this guy, Sedane Rafaela for the Red Sox. It looks like he's going to, be there starting, I think it's center field or whatnot, but the guy, he's got some power and speed to him and you get him for free. You know, especially in deeper leagues, 5 outfielder leagues, I ended up taking him in the reserve draft. But I guess part of being in all these drafts, especially in auction where you could actually, you know, make sure that you get the guys that you want. I got White Langford for $16 and then Evan Carter only went for $10. So 2 very young Ranger outfielders, but White Langford getting a lot of helium.
Yeah, and I just moved him in my rankings above Evan Carter.
Yeah,
out there on the hitter list, which is out there. I don't have the taxi squad out there right now, so I'm still getting a lot of comments of like, "Where's this guy? Where's this guy?" And I'm like, "Well, he's not quite in the 150, right?" So like, Mikel Garcia is someone who's been getting a lot of hype this spring, and I got nothing against Mikel Garcia. It's just he has a very limited upside. He's a speed guy, Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's just kind of what he is. Double digit home runs, not super likely for Garcia. And Rafaela is someone who he's got, you know, I think he does just a little bit of everything, just enough to be relevant across the board. Mm-hmm. And he's not in my top 150, and he'll probably sneak in there at some point. Right. I think, you know, upside, he's got 20-20 power speed, and he could hit like 250, 260. I think that's the upside. The downside is worse, because the thing is, he doesn't walk. He's never walked, right? In OBP leagues, you just don't pay that much attention to him right now, because, you know, he's like at best a 300 OBP guy, right? Now, he is having a good spring, and his slash line's better than that because, you know, it's 20 games, and lots of guys can be good for 20 games. But, you know, I think with him, is someone in standard leagues, five outfield, it's worth a flyer, right? Especially if you've already had to move some guys, like, you know, you've had to move some things around because you have someone get injured or maybe didn't quite make a roster. If you have an opening, I think he's someone worth looking into, but again, not an OBP. I think an OBP, I've just got too many other trees I'd like to climb, that might have higher upside on the ratios. It's right. Really hard in OBP to have a guy with a sub 300 OBP.
Mm-hmm. So I went into this draft, you know, it's a points league where, you know, you get points per event. So you get a point for single, 2 points for double, 4 points for home run, et cetera, et cetera. So I went in, I wanted to get at least two guys that I know could hit 40 home runs. And I came out with Pete Alonso for $28. And, you know, I think he could hit 40 home runs in his sleep. And Aaron Judge, I got him for $35. It's a five outfielder league. And then I ended up picking up Adolis Garcia for $17, and he's a guy that could hit 35 home runs. And in a good year, I think he's going to have, you know, before his career is over, he's probably going to have one season where he hits 40 home runs. So that was my, you know, thinking going into it. And, you know, I think I got some good value at the middle infield position with Trevor Story for $2. I mean, it's not a batting average league, even though I think he's probably capable of hitting maybe 240 this season, but, you know, 20 homers, 20 steals. If he's healthy all season, I think it's a definite possibility. And I got my man Anthony Rizzo for $1. So, and I know I got the Jack Berger's another guy you like, right? I only got him for $4.
I like Jake Berger. I think that he, you know, again, he unlocked something while he was in his last couple weeks with the White Sox, and he went over to Miami, and they know, like, again, Miami didn't fix Jake Berger. They noticed he had fixed himself.
Right, right.
And went after him. So he's an interesting guy. I think, you know, Story, I really struggle with Story because it's been a while since he's played anything close to a full season. That was 2021. Mm-hmm. He played 142 games, and they were decent, right? 2021 was a long time ago, man. Like, it's not that many years, but in pro sports, the difference between a 28-year-old and a 31-year-old is significant, right? Like, they're on different sides of the curve, right? So, you know, again, a good spring from Trevor Story. I still think the strikeouts are going to be problematic, right? Like, I still anticipate him having over a 30% strikeout rate. And then so basically, like, as a 2020, you know, if I go with the projections and say, okay, he's like a little better than 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases, and he hits 240, like, is it that special, right? He's actually projected for a WRC plus under 100, right? Like, the rest of it's speed, and he's getting older. So, you know, he's only, again, 2020 is the last time he stole 20 bases. He was on pace for that roughly last season. I mean, he was. He had 10 stolen bases in his 43 games, but, you know, he also only hit 203 with an OBP of 250. Like, he was really bad last season.
Right.
So I am still just really hesitant with Trevor Story.
Well, and I, you know, it's a fair point that you say, but, you know, that being,
but I'm thinking as more, a late I'm round thinking, flyer.
Oh yeah.
As and a late round flyer. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. As long as you accept that it's a lotto ticket.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Definitely.
That's
is.
What he is.
And, you know, and then I, in the reserve round, my first pick was a guy that I'm really high on. And as the offseason has progressed, I love Zach Neto. You know, here's a guy that batted .321 with a .961 OPS, had some issues last season with health, but in 84 games had 9 home runs and 5 stolen bases, had a really good spring, three home runs, four stolen bases, batted 326. And like I said, picked him up in the first round of the reserve. So if Story, doesn't pan out, just move Zito in. And look, this is in a 12-teamer, there's going to be players, both hitters and pitchers that are going to be on the waiver wire. So your league is tougher because it's a 15-team league. But you're playing categories, right? Is it batting average or OBP? Your league?
OBP.
Okay. Yeah. See, yeah, I don't really – I mean, obviously you care about a batting average because you get points for hits, and obviously you get more hits and your batting average is higher. But I think what could kill me with Story could be if he really has one of those seasons where he just strikes out like crazy. But for $2, I mean
– it's really hard to – you know, I get asked all the time, like, hey, what about points league content? Here's the thing about that. Every points league is its own unique little snowflake, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a negative way. It's that, you know, people play with points league settings. There is no standard points league setting.
Right.
Right. Like, when you talk about roto or categories, like, there's only so many variations that you see. And, like, eventually you get to weird ones, but still the values are roughly the same, right? Mm-hmm. Just that the more categories you add, the less you care about stolen bases. Mm-hmm. Simply because stolen bases tend to be not so influential on the other categories. So they sort of stand alone. So like punting one thing when you have 14 categories is less of a big deal. But in points leagues, the one thing that is fairly consistent across all points leagues is that you want guys with a good strikeout to walk ratio and or put a ton of balls in play. Mm-hmm. A good example would be old school Joey Gallo. He was not the best points league play. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because he never put anything in play.
Right.
It was like 40%. It was close to like 45% of the at-bats or plate appearances he had ended in a walk or a strikeout. Right. Like, mm-hmm. So only half the ball, like only everything else is like half the balls are going in play. A bunch of them are ground out. So like, he was never that great of a points league play, but a guy, again, classic examples would be like the Luis Arraez and Jeff mm-hmm. McNeils and Zach Neto's of the world who put tons of balls in play. And that drives value. Now the thing with Zach Neto is, you know, number one, injuries have been a problem. Mm-hmm. He did not play much last season. He gets drafted in 2022. Like we don't have a lot of track record on him, because he was drafted back in 2022, but so he's hurt last season, misses a lot of that. And unfortunately right now, you know, I worry that he's going to hit ninth mm-hmm. and ninth for the Angels is a really ugly place to be because they don't have a lot of talent in terms of like, you know, the further you get away from Mike Trout in this lineup, the worse off you're going to be.
Right.
Right. So I think against lefties, he could move up in this lineup. Like you could see him hitting like second, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
I'm shaking my head here because I'm looking at MLB playing time projections for the Angels starting lineup and Aaron Hicks is leading off.
Oh. Yeah. It's like they've got three guys who can do it. They've got Aaron Hicks.
They talked about Rengifo,
the
right?
Of Aaron Hicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Luis Rengifo.
Yeah.
Who is interesting. He's eligible everywhere.
Right.
Switch hitter.
I think he's hurt though.
So
now.
Is Hicks. Mm-hmm. And then,
Mickey Moniak. I think Rengifo might be hurt right now. I don't know if he's on the IL, but I know he's got some health issues.
Yeah, and then Zach Neto. And the problem is the guys that lose, it does look like Rengifo's slated, you know, he is supposed to get back into action, but you're right, he did have a hamstring issue. Mm-hmm. The guys that lose will sort of fall to the bottom because I do think they want Nolan Schaunel to hit like second, like as the very classic table setter type of player. Mm-hmm. Cause he's not going to strike out. He's not going to hit the ball hard, but he's going to hit it.
Right.
So I think they want someone to set the table for Trout. And then whatever they can get out of Rendon and Ward and Drury after that will be great. But the guys that lose that fight are going to move to the bottom of the lineup. And that's it's just a horrible place to be for the Angels.
How could you hate the Angels lineup when you have Anthony Rendon projected to back cleanup? When he feels like it.
I mean,
when he wants to play.
I think it'll be Taylor Ward. And I still like Taylor Ward.
Right.
I just
it could be a nice bounce back season for him, sure.
Yeah, but like Moniak is not that good.
No.
You know, we've talked about it plenty. I think Brandon Drury is like decent, right? But he's, you like, we talked about him being guy.
Undervalued. Just the guy that kind of quietly will hit you 20 home runs and bat 250, 260 every season. So he's got some value. I mean, plus multi-position eligible too.
Yeah, just a big part of the reason why in 12-team leagues, I didn't care about drafting second base. Like, if I got an early second baseman, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I just didn't care.
Right, right. All right, so it's going to be an interesting season. I'll be revamping my roster all season long. I already have my eyes on some moves, some waiver wire moves. And if you want to check out both Scott and my drafts and everyone else's drafts in Tout Wars, go to toutwars.com. You'll find a link to all the drafts that we did. So, hey, I think this would be a good spot for us to take our second break. Then when we come back, I want to talk about some of the younger players that made the opening roster, some that didn't, and what we could expect from them this season. We'll be right back. Right after this.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks Fantasy Baseball Podcast. You got Joe Gallina. You got Scott Chu. And before we went to our break, I talked about some players that we would be talking about that made the opening day rosters on their respective teams. I don't know if you we mentioned Wyatt Langford. I told you I got him for $16 in Tout Wars. He's had an incredible spring, Scott. You have any concerns about Langford, or do you believe the hype? Do you think that there's too much helium?
Concerns? No, apart from the fact that this is his second year in professional ball, right? He got drafted last year. So, like, do I believe that he has a boatload of talent? Absolutely, I do. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the question, of course, becomes, we've not seen him play against high level competition for an extended period of time. So right. It's not as though I have concerns as much as it is that, you know, I have the normal reservations I think everyone should have about a player in his second year in pro ball. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, that was still enough for me to rank him quite high. Right. So I ranked Wyatt Langford 77th. That's a spot above Lane Thomas. That's above Ian Happ. That's above Jorge Soler, above some other guys who've had exciting springs like Ke'Bryan Hayes. I think that's a lot of upside. I actually ranked him very intentionally like one spot behind Riley Green because, and the reason for that is because I've seen Riley Green be successful against big league pitching. And that's just the one thing we haven't seen from Langford quite yet, but we could, right? I mean, again, we're talking about a guy who in combined plate appearances or combined games played in AA and AAA is 17. He has more games this spring training than he had in all of AA and AAA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just really let that sink in for a second. Did he rake? Absolutely. He raked at every level. Mm-hmm. Not trying to take that away from him. 6 home runs this spring. Like, this kid has major talent.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But again, very, very, I mean, he only played 24 games in high A. right? Like, this is a guy with almost no professional experience at any level. So just keep that in mind, that there's going to be some ups and downs.
One of the great fantasy baseball analysts is Lenny the Legend Melnick. Love him. Great guy. And he's famous for saying, you know, a rookie is a rookie is a rookie. Now, I have Wyatt Langford rostered on a couple of teams, because part of playing a fantasy is just, you know, rostering some of the players that you're going to enjoy watching play. Like you have Ellie De La Cruz on your Tout Wars team, right? I mean, it's just fun to watch. Yeah, just to fun to watch some of these guys. But Lenny's right. You know, sometimes, there are, you know, situations where, you know, a rookie is a rookie is a rookie. And for every, great rookie, there's another one who gets sent down in midseason. So I just keep that in mind. But
wild, mm-hmm. just to put it out there. Wyatt Langford is not going to be the first person from his draft class to debut in the major leagues. Of course, that was Nolan Schoennel.
Right.
Nolan Schoennel is the first player of that draft class to premiere in Major League Baseball, which is just wild to me that Langford, who has basically no MLB experience, same amount as Nolan Schoennel, is not the first guy to make the majors. Like, that just blows my mind. Like, the world we're living in right now. The guy, Nolan Schoennel, could make it to the majors the same year he's drafted.
Right.
Just wild. Again, totally different kind of hitter. He's this, like, the ceiling and floor for Schoennel is like the same line, right? Like, he's an incredibly predictable asset for the Angels. And that's why he came up. They're like, yep, that's what we thought. He's just like a robot single hitting machine. Right. Like, that's just what he is. But, you know, Langford, again, very little experience. Like, I say little experience, and just to put that in like proper perspective, like, he has much less minor league track record than Juan Soto did when Soto debuted at 19. Mm. Right. Much less, because Soto was playing rookie ball at age 17. Mm-hmm. Right. So he was around for 2016, 2017, 2018 before debuting in 2018. Right. So, like, we saw him around, and he raked, right? Like, Soto raked all the way through, but he actually did a lot more. Like, Soto played like twice as many games just in rookie ball than Wyatt Langford has his entire minor league career.
Wow. Yeah. A couple other guys. Jackson Merrill made the Padres opening day roster and actually played on opening day, first two games, hit the ball hard. What's your thoughts about him? He's going to be multi-position eligible. I think it's going to be shortstop and outfield, right?
Yeah. So he's someone, he was drafted first round draft pick back in 2021 out of high school. So he's got, you know, some minor league track record. He hit fairly well, but let's not get, you know, overly hyped. This is a hit tool first, second, and third kind of player who is, you know, all around is kind of interesting, but, you know, to use the old adage, this is a better professional baseball player than he is a fantasy addition. Right. Because again, he's really good hit tool, the kind of guy who can put like everything in play. I mean, he did strike out a couple times over the weekend. But that's not something I expect. He struck out, I mean, in double A, he struck out 11.8% of the time. In spring training, he's barely struck out at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, he's someone who I think in points leagues is kind of sneaky as like a back end sort of ad, but there's not a ton of power upside here. I think 15 is about as many as he could get. He might steal 10 bases and get sort of paltry counting stats at the bottom of the Padres lineup. There's a lot of it. I think there's some excitement here in Dynasty as, you know, Merrill becomes someone who is a viable outfielder who could eventually put up some really nice batting averages, hitting a lot of balls in play, that kind of thing. But I don't, you know, he doesn't nearly have the ceiling of, you know, some of these other rookies that are being sent up or sent down.
Another Jackson, and put him on the, on our little chat, but Jackson Chourio is another guy that, along with Jackson Merrill and the aforementioned Wyatt Langford, you know, just they're just pushing them through. Signed them to the Brewers did sign Chourio to a long-term contract. He held his own in the spring, 63 plate appearances, 90% K rate, and the projection models all have him with at least 15 home runs and upwards of, you know, 30 steals and a decent batting average. And just looking at his MLB playing time, looks like he's going to be the everyday center fielder, but it looks like he's going to be batting towards the bottom of the lineup, batting around the seventh spot.
Yeah, and that's probably what we're going to see for now. The nice thing is that this lineup has plenty of places for him to move up, right? He could certainly overcome, you know, whatever this lineup ends up looking like. I think he could definitely end up moving ahead of like Sal Frelick and Gary Sanchez. And then depending on what version of Willy Adames we're looking at any given time, he could move. I do think Churio can kind of settle into that fifth or sixth spot. In not too much time, right? I think by May or June, we could see that happening. Either way, Churio's initial impact is going to be stolen bases, because I think pretty much every time he gets on base, they're going to let him run. The question then becomes how much power can we find out of the gate? You know, last year in Double A, he was dynamic, right? 22 home runs, 43 stolen bases. It's harder to steal in the major leagues, of course, but I think he definitely has the speed of a 25 to 30 stolen base guy. Like, I'll take the over. Like, ATC only has 21. The bat has 16. I'll take the over. I'm probably closer to Zips on this, which is 35. Just because I think the Brewers are just going to let him run because they want to stay competitive in the NL Central. And they don't have a ton of paths to do that. So they're probably going to need to get everything they can out of Churio's legs. So I think the biggest thing is just, I like this spring that he hasn't struck out that much. I know he doesn't have a home run. I'm fine with that. He only has 2 stolen bases. Okay, fine. He's healthy, which is good. I mean, he doesn't really have a long injury history or anything like that. And most importantly, he put a lot of balls in play, didn't strike out. That's what I wanted to see from him. And that's what he did. So, I think he's definitely one of the rookies I'm most excited about seeing in terms of like long, you know, being a guy who you can roster all season long. Again, ups and downs, certainly likely. I do rank him behind Lankford. I rank Churio 94th overall. That's that's actually a spot behind Masataka Yoshida. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit behind Spencer Steer. And it's actually a few spots above Jordan Walker, just to sort of, get an idea of, like, especially young players around him. He's like just a little bit ahead of Jordan Walker. He's a bit behind like a Spencer Steer. And of course he's like a good, he's a whole tier below Wyatt Langford, but still very exciting guy. I think you really need to watch for. He's also just a bit above Anthony Volpe.
If you like the fact that Churio puts the ball in play, doesn't strike out too much, then you're going to love a guy that you already talked about is Curtis Meade. I just realized the guy had an 8% K rate in 50 plate appearances in spring training. And I know we spoke about him before, and, he might not have a clear path to everyday playing time, but I mean, if things fall right, if Brandon Lau slumps and, he might play some. And also we can talk about another Rays guy that you spoke about, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on him, but Junior Caminero, second base shortstop, third base eligible. And the guy hit 31 home runs in playing for 2 minor league teams last season. He only had 27 plate appearances this spring, but held his own with a 15% K rate. But the issue is something that you alluded to earlier, too, just the Rays, they love to turn that lineup around, and playing time could be an issue for both of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually several rookies the Rays have that I'm sort of excited to see. Curtis Meade is one. He's a real interesting guy. I believe he's Australian. He's someone who originally from the Phillies. He comes over to Tampa Bay, really shoots through their minor league system at first. Steps a little bit back last season, although he was still quite good in AAA, 9 home runs in 61 games. There's not a ton of power here. He's probably like a 15 home run guy, but we could, I think, at some point really see these strong batting averages and OBPs come through like we saw from him. Again, in the minors, he hit 294, 385, 515. And while I'm not sure how high the slug gets in the major league level, this is a guy who could definitely hit like 270, 280, be a real Jeff McNeil type, I think, which sounds like a bad thing, but he might have a little bit more ceiling than that, because he might be more of like a 15, to 20 home run guy than McNeil's like kind of 10 ish, other than 2019, because 2019. But yeah, I think that's where Meade could be. I don't think we see that this year, though. The other guys I'm excited about, of course, Caminero, who did not make the opening day roster, even though, you know, I think early on we really expected him to.
Yes.
But it just kind of didn't work out that way. He's someone who, again, like in a 12-team league, you can't just stash him, mm-hmm. right? Because we don't know how long he'll be down. But he certainly has a lot more power than Meade does, right? Mm. And I think the Rays would like him to win that job, because I think in a full season, Caminero is more of a 20 to 25 home run guy who can hit for a good batting average. It's just a matter of like getting him the chance to play. I think, you know, he also puts a lot of balls in play. He didn't have a great spring. The other, again, another young player who is kind of like Caminero and Meade. It's sort of like he's like in this positionless sort of dance somewhere in the infield. Jonathan Aranda. Hmm. So Aranda is a guy who we've seen a little bit in 2022 and 2023. He did not play well in his major league appearances, but he was excellent in AAA last season. 25 home runs in 95 games. Hit 339, 449, 613, just massive numbers in AAA. And was really good in AAA the year before that, too. So he should be pretty close to being an everyday major league guy. Of course, he broke something in his hand. I think it's like his finger, you know, one of his fingers.
Yeah.
Yep. So he'll miss some time. But he was, until that happened, he was projected to be the everyday DH. I think the Rays do want to get him time. So someone else to just kind of keep your eye on as he starts to get healthy, which will probably be in early May. Jonathan Aranda, another rookie. Again, it's all going to be about playing time and how the Rays feel like shuffling these guys up.
Yeah, he only struck out 8% of the time in 38 plate appearances this spring. So that is impressive. So starting, we mentioned Caminero as one of the guys that didn't make the opening day roster, but we could see at some point this season. Let's talk about a few more. Like, for instance, Jackson Holliday for the Orioles. I mean, I kind of had a feeling that there was a chance that he might not, you know, but a lot of people were shocked. You know, I wrote MLB capsules for Fantasy Alarm, and he was one of the players I wrote about. I mentioned that there was a chance that he wouldn't make the roster, but had a pretty good spring, right? 311 batting average, 954 OPS in 48 plate appearances. He did strike out 31% of the time this spring. He's only 20 years old, has only played 18 games in AAA. By the way, MLB playing time has Gunnar Henderson at shortstop against righties, and with Ramon Urias playing third, and then Jorge Mateo playing short against left-handed pitching, and Gunnar Henderson playing third against lefties. But do you think that this, the fact that the Holliday is starting in the minor leagues, is that more a service time consideration? Or do you think that the Orioles think that maybe that 31% K rate is a little concerning and maybe you could get some more seasoning in the minor leagues?
I guess my first thought is this. If they were worried about the strikeout rate, why'd they keep Jorge Mateo? if that's the backup that you have at shortstop, Ramon Urias is a fine enough player. He's, you know, kind of been around for a little while. He was good this spring, hit a couple home runs, walked a ton, didn't strike out like at all, but he'll go back to being what is essentially a very, very average player, both or at least on the offensive side. I think defensively he's kind of decent, so they do like him there at least. But again, I take that back. He's not that good defensively. He has been in the past. He was not last year, Ramon Urias. So it's got to be buying time, because if you're the Orioles and you realize your window is coming, right? Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo are not the paths forward, right? Like that's not how,
of course,
that's not how you mm-hmm. get it done. So I think what we'll see eventually is Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo sort of, I expect that Jorge Mateo gets let go, or they find a way, like, if Colton Cowser doesn't quite hit that well, or Jordan Westberg doesn't quite hit that well, I think that changes everything, right? So if Westberg struggles out the gate, you could see him go down. He's still got options. You see Holiday come up, right? Probably sometime in May. And then, you know, Holiday can play short. Gunner can move to third. You can have Urias play second. If, you know, if Cowser goes, that just gives Holiday a spot on the bench to eventually overtake, you know, somebody so that he can get some time at shortstop. Because again, Henderson can play short and third. I think they'd rather have Gunnar Henderson play third. So Ramon Urias is there, but not because they want him to be their everyday third baseman as much as it is he needs to be their everyday third baseman until they can put Gunnar Henderson back there because their shortstop of the future is ready to go. So I think that this is a waiting game kind of thing. There are very few prospect hitters I would stash. Jackson Holiday is one I would consider if I already drafted him. I might consider just stashing him for a month to see what happens.
Yeah. Let's hope that Gunnar Henderson plays short for at least 15 games. This way he'll be dual position eligible for next season. But I'm with you. I think that maybe by May, maybe the latest June, we could probably see Holiday in the major league. So
Holiday is like top. Like the reason I say that for Holiday is this is like top, you know, top prospect in baseball right now. Like he's on the short list of like the top five that I'd consider stashing depending on what's available.
Yeah. And I do think it's a service time consideration personally, but you know, like I said, maybe that strikeout rate might've opened some eyes. So, but you're right about Mateo being a guy that strikes out a lot as well, but just a couple more players we'll talk about and then we'll head out. How about James Wood, Nationals outfielder, got him back in the Juan Soto deal from the Padres. A little bit of a free swinger, but really crushed the ball this spring. Four home runs, scored 13 runs. Like I said, a free swinger throughout his career, minor league career, but 23% K rate this spring. And who knows, maybe we could see him around the same time, maybe a May or June call up for the Nationals.
First of all, he's enormous. James Wood is 6'6" is what they list him at, 234 pounds, just an enormous left-handed batter. You know, we've seen those throughout history and they can be very fun to watch. But so, yeah, he's this just massive, gargantuan guy. Just loads of raw power. Has four home runs this spring. Also can run a little bit, stole three bases as well.
Yeah.
I do think that he probably would have struggled with strikeouts if he was up right now. Like, yes, I know he had a 509 OBP and 57 plate appearances in spring training, and that's really cool. But, I was not surprised to see Wood go down despite the strong spring. I also do think he'll eventually come back up. I don't know if it'll be as early as May. The Nationals have a weird roster, right? I mean, they very much have a rebuilding, like slightly better version of Oakland. What do we feel like, you know, do whatever we feel like, with a lot of these retreads they've pulled out. Jesse Winker on this team.
Right.
Like the goat, like if you didn't remember, if he was still around, he is, and he might be batting in the middle of this lineup.
Right.
So, might be a decent little platoon play there. Obviously they picked up Joey Gallo, earlier this off season. Nick Senzel ended up on this team. Just a lot of weird players, that have ended up. Eddie Rosario on this team as well. Just like, it's a weird collection of players.
And Victor Robles is still on the roster.
Yeah. You know, honestly, the biggest takeaway for the Nationals from where I sit right now is they've been willing to run this spring. And, you know, several great minds have shown that spring numbers on stolen bases do correlate to what happens in the regular season. And I think a big thing there is, especially for a guy like CJ Abrams, who's projected to lead off, or even in the very deep leagues that Victor Robles at the bottom of that order, I think this team's going to run. I think there's going to be a ton of stolen bases to be had. Especially if you're, you know, if you're doing betting or DFS or whatever, I think those are going to be there. I had some hesitations on CJ Abrams and they are fading as I see this team run in the spring. So that's really been the biggest deal for me to see several guys with multiple stolen bases this spring from Washington suggest to me that they're ready to run. And that could be very exciting.
Yeah. I like the fact that you said that sometimes the spring, if you run in the spring, it could carry over into regular season, because I'm just taking a sidebar here before we get to our last player that we'll talk about. But Bo Bichette has a few stolen bases this spring. So hopefully he'll run this season, because he hasn't the past few. So last player I just wanted to just touch upon was Kyle Manzardo, first baseman for the Guardians. You got to wonder why he's starting in the minors, I guess. Maybe need him to work on his defense a little bit. You know, I thought originally there was a numbers crunch when it came to Davison De Los Santos, who they picked up as a Rule 5 draft pick. But the Guardians sent him back on Saturday to the Diamondbacks. So, if they were going to keep him, they couldn't send him down to the minors. But I don't know, maybe if it's a situation where, again, they want to keep Manzardo under team control. He had a 30% K rate in spring training, so maybe he could use a little seasoning as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's because they're going to let – I mean, Josh Naylor is a decent, you know, decent first baseman defensively. Right. At least by outs above average. Right. So he was 5 outs above average last season at first base. He's a terrible plotting outfielder, but Naylor can play first base. I think that is really where that comes in for the Guardians. And I think they're just going to rotate their DH spot. There's Will Brennan. They probably still want to give one more shot at Gabriel Arias. A former Yankee prospect, Estevan Florial, on this team. Mm-hmm. Looks like he's made the team as well. So I think they're going to let some of these guys flame out or succeed before giving Manzardo a chance. He should really be their first baseman / DH with Josh Naylor. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll happen eventually. But for now, like this Guardians team is really in limbo right now. I'm not sure if they really have decided whether they're going to try to rebuild or if they're gonna just kind of go for it in a weak NL Central. Just the whole back half of their lineup is a lot of question marks for me, especially Ramon Laureano, Brennan, Tyler Freeman,
Brian Rocchio.
Rocchio's he's still considered a decent prospect, but the rest of the line, I mean, it's not a strong lineup, and the pitching staff is decent, but I wonder how it'll look this season. It feels very average to me, but we'll see. I guess it really depends on how well Tristan McKenzie can bounce back. Tanner Bibee, Carlos Carrasco back on the team, right? Looks like their fifth starter right now. So we'll see how that goes, but he could be on this team and he's just not. And I don't know if it's service time or what.
No. Okay. So I think that just about slams the lid on things for this episode. Any more drafts for you, or are you done?
No, I'm finally done. But now that, because we talked about spring training stolen bases, and overall there is a there's a correlation between stolen bases in the spring and stolen bases in the regular season. Surprisingly, who do you think leads all of spring training in stolen bases? You just had to guess.
If I had to guess, how about the kid from Oakland, Esteberry Urias, is that his name?
Asturi Ruiz. Ruiz. Yeah. Good guess. Wrong. Dalton Varsho. Dalton Varsho. 8 stolen bases this spring. So there is some correlation. However, I would not be putting my bets on him making it. In fact, now I want to see Asturi Ruiz isn't even on like the top 30. He ranked 150th on this list. I'm just not a big fan of what Ruiz brings. Oh, he has two. He has 2 stolen bases this spring.
And how many does Varsho have again?
8. 8.
Wow.
8.
Okay. Wow.
Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe the Blue Jays, you know, like I said, Bichette is running a little bit, and now you're saying that Varsho is running. Maybe the Blue Jays are just going to be the go-go Blue Jays.
Varsho had 16 all of last season, 158 games, right? Yeah. In 18 spring training games, he has 8.
Wow.
8. Like, sure, man. And he's like barely striking out. He looks real good this spring. I don't know how much you want to take from that or not, but You know, I
batting
guess
average is
I
look always at concerned with him because he could hit for power. Has stolen some bases in the past.
More walks than strikeouts this spring from Dalton Varsho.
Wow, but he's not catcher eligible anymore, right? Unfortunately,
no, he's just an outfielder.
Yeah.
You know, and he turned it on at the end of last season.
He's just like Ken, right? Just an outfielder.
Yeah. Anywhere else, he'd be a catcher.
I'm just an outfielder.
Now he's just an outfielder. Varsho is in my top 150. He's at 111. And gosh, maybe I should have moved him up a little bit. Great. But that depends on how much you want to take spring training numbers seriously. I think the stolen bases are interesting. Maybe he gets to 20 stolen bases this year. I'm not sure I'm putting too much stock in the more walks than strikeouts given his track record.
Right.
Usually it's 3-1 strikeouts to walks for him. So we'll see how it goes. But I just thought that was very interesting. Dalton Varsho, of all the spring guys, leading, he's by two whole steals.
Wow.
The next guys are all at 6.
That is interesting. Yes. And it's going to be interesting to see how baseball itself, how the teams react to year two with these new rules where, you know, some of the teams that maybe didn't run as much last season and they see the success with the stolen base rate that happened last season, they're like, hey, maybe this is something we need to look into. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on.
Yeah. Oh, and just, you know, one more just for fun. Lowest strikeout rate with at least 40 plate appearances in spring training. Miguel Andujar with 0.
Wow.
0.
What are the rest of his numbers? Do you know? Because I know that,
Yeah, quite good, actually.
Nando DeFino's guy. If you know Nando DeFino, I'm sure you know him.
Yeah. Miguel Andujar over in Oakland.
This year.
He's over in Oakland. 2.3% walk rate. Mm-hmm. 0% strikeout rate. Hitting 357, 372, 738. That's the slug. It's a 187 WRC plus.
Yeah. He's only 29. And look, what do the A's have to lose? Like Nando says, I mean, they're going to play him every day and he can always hit.
Five home runs.
Yeah.
15 hits and 5 home runs in spring training with 0 strikeouts and 1 walk.
Yeah.
That's the craziest set of numbers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Especially for this guy. Miguel Andujar couldn't keep a job on the Pirates.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think he's always had the bat, just the defense. You know, he had that in 2018, hit 27 home runs.
Oh,
batted 297.
And just kidding. As of Saturday, he tore his meniscus in his right knee. He's going to have surgery.
Oh my goodness.
What a bummer. Massive. Not,
I bet you he's like on almost every one of Nando DeFino's teams. Because he's been talking them up all preseason. So I feel bad.
But that's fun with spring numbers.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the best spring I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Probably.
Jeez. Okay.
No strikeouts and 43 plate appearances.
That is amazing. Yes. All right. Well, good stuff. You can follow my buddy. Get good stuff from this guy all season long. Does the hitter list for the pitcher list site. You can follow him at If the Chew Fits. You can follow me at Joe Galena. Follow our podcast. Leave us a rating. Tell us what you think. If you hate it, tell us. If you love it, tell us. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be back next week. Enjoy, Scott. Enjoy opening day. Thursday's going to be so awesome. Where are the Tigers opening up? Away? Home? Who are they playing?
I believe they're at home. Yeah, actually, I got asked if I could go, but I got all these kids. So I don't know if I'm going to make it, but
all right.
I will be at least at home watching.
Be an interesting season, to say the least. So, like we like to say, hope that all of your fantasies become realities, and we'll see you next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.